Welcome to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. I'm Brad Pollock. Rob Brobich is in the studio with me today. Gary's out of town. Rob, how you doing today?
Great. How you doing?
Good. Nice to have you here.
Nice to be here.
We're Bell and Pollock. We're a law firm. We specialize in personal injury cases. If you have a personal injury loss, if you've been hurt in an accident, if you've been hurt in anything, give us a call. We'll determine what rights you have. We'll give you a free consultation. You'll come in. We'll put together a game plan for you so we can help you determine what your rights are and what you can and can't do. But today, we're just lawyers trying to answer any questions you've got on any topic you've got. We bring this show to you as a service. We're here from 7 to 8 o'clock. You can call us at 303-713-8255. That's 303-713-8255. You can call us in Steamboat Springs at 970-457-1009. If it's a question that we can't answer, the law is very, very broad, covers a lot of topics. If it's a question we can't answer, then we'll find the answer for you, and we'll give you a call during the week and talk to you about it, or have one of the lawyers at our office call and talk to you about it. It's our goal to try and help people figure out what they're doing and at least initially get them down the road as far as what's happening. So 303-713-8255. Tomorrow we're going to be doing a show. You know, we do a show on Sundays. We've been talking about Uber and Lyft for the Great American Beer Festival. A lot of things going on. We've got Christmas coming up. We've got Halloween coming up. We've got Thanksgiving. We've got New Year's. People are going to be using these ride-sharing groups or ride-to-ride where they're going to be calling on Uber and Lyft. Have you ever stopped to think? Have you ever stopped to wonder what kind of coverage you have? What kind of are you protected when you get in that car? Does that driver have coverage? Does Uber have coverage? If the person who hits you when you're driving or when you're riding in the Uber car, the person who hits you has coverage, what's going to protect you in the event you're hurt? Things to think about, things to deal with. Let's talk a little bit about personal injury. We in our firm quite often, or we do have a work comp division. Rob heads up that division. Rob, what's new in the work comp area?
There's nothing too interesting. What's great though is now, instead, when you inform your employer that you were injured on the job, they have to give you a list of four different providers. Previously it was just two, but now they have to give you a list of four different providers, and you can choose which physician you want to treat with from that list. And I tell you what, once you get injured and you get that list, that should be the time when you're contacting an attorney for at the very least, just to find out which doctor that the attorney believes you should seek treatment with.
And, you know, remember, work comp deals with an injury on the job. But that's pretty broad scope, isn't it, Rob?
It is, very much so. You get all different types of injuries, and you can deal with occupational disease type of injuries, or you can just deal with different parts of injuring different parts of your body.
Can include if you're headed to work, can include while you're headed to and from work.
That's a kind of a technical issue. There are exceptions, but for the most part, no. If you're going to and from work, you won't be covered under the Work Comp Act. Now, like I said, there are certain exceptions. For example, one exception would be if your employer is paying for your travel time, perhaps your employer provides a vehicle, or if you're out of town on business, you're pretty much covered the entire time while you're out of town. Now, those are just a couple of exceptions. There are more. Another interesting issue that comes up is when people are injured in the parking lot of their employer, slip and fall on the snow, trip in the parking lot, those are covered under the Work Comp Act.
You'd never dream it's that way. You'd never believe it's that way. But sometimes what you need to do is you need to call a lawyer and you need to talk to him about it. You need to find out what your rights are and what protection you have. You need to have an idea of what protection you're going to be able to use and how you're going to get compensated for your injury. You can call us at 303-713-8255. 8255. We're going to go with the phones when we get the calls. We have Sherry. You're in Colorado Springs. You want to talk to us about a construction law question?
Yes, I do.
Hey, Sherry, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Good. What can we do for you?
Well, I lost my fire. I lost my house in the Black Forest fire. So we rebuilt, and our contractor basically ended up doing a beyond poor job. We actually do have code issues, and we went to regional about that. So their lawyer may be assisting some. But I was interested in how we would file. We had originally spoken with a lawyer before we closed, and we didn't really have a lot of choice because of how insurance works after a fire.
Uh-huh.
He says we do have a case, but recoverable, we didn't have probably enough to warrant hiring a lawyer. So I'm wondering, how do we file, and can we file under construction defect and consumer protection?
Well, you can, but, you know, when you start talking about the fact you had code issues, but at the same time, it's not enough to be able to bring a case or to warrant hiring a lawyer?
Well, the attorney told us unless you have about $50,000 of truly recoverable types of damages that you end up paying more to attorneys than you end up getting.
Well, okay, first of all, the contract you did, I presume you have a contract with that contractor.
Yes, and it was basically one of the standard, just generalized contracts.
Does it call for arbitration in it?
Yes, it does.
Okay, and is it with the American Arbitration Association?
You know, I don't have it in front of me, but most likely it is.
All right, a lot of times they do, and the problem with that is the American Arbitration Association can be very expensive in filing to begin with. And a lot of times you have to jump through that hoop, or you have to get an exemption, or you have to see if the contractor is going to require that that be followed.
Okay.
It's expensive on both sides for the filing fee, but then you can put together your case. And as you put together your case, you have a little bit more relaxed rules that you can follow through with the arbitrators. But one of the secrets is getting the right arbitrators who understand construction law and who understand the homeowner's rights as well as the contractor's rights.
Right.
So you can get the Arbitration Association rules by contacting the American Arbitration Association.
Okay.
But how much do you think the damages are to your home?
I would say we've already done some of the work, and we've probably already spent between $5,000 and $10,000 completing work or correcting work, including we had an internal staircase that was literally unsafe. It fell twice the day before. Our certificate of occupancy was issued, and the day before that, with the carpet installers on them.
Well, if you believe that, are you concerned at all about the diminished value to your home?
Oh yes, we have corners that don't come together correctly. We have walls that are crooked. There's so many issues that. The value is diminished, but it's very hard to prove, my understanding, what is a diminished value. And it's not like the value of our house is that high. I mean, this house is close to $1 million, and this was a custom home builder.
I was going to say, Black Forest homes are very expensive. Sherry, I don't know if I agree with the advice you got from your lawyer.
Okay.
What I'd like to do is take your name and number, have my office call you and discuss this more with you, look at the contracts, look at what's going on, because I think we can prove those type of things.
Okay.
And I think it's going to be important we check out this contractor and take some action against him.
Okay.
And let's see if we can help you, okay?
That'd be awesome.
I'm going to put you on hold, and we'll take your name and number, and we'll call you this week, all right?
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
Thank you for calling the Bell & Paulk Legal Show. We're going to take a short break. 303-713-8255. Lines are open. Give us a call. Welcome back to the Bell and Paul Legal Show, 303-713-8255. Brad Pollack, Rob Brovage in the studio here to talk to you about whatever questions you have. If you have a legal question, give us a call. If we can't answer it here, we'll talk to you off the air. We'll get you started down the road to giving answers. We have some lines open for calls at 303-713-8255. Right now we're going to talk to Steve. You have a question about shared housing?
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I saw a report from Boulder a couple of weeks ago about some 12 people living in a house and shared. And then this is going on in Denver, this similar thing, that motel type thing that they rent out rooms for a couple of days or weeks or something. I tried to figure out how could I find out from the city. The city don't respond to any question about that. I called the city and reported this house is have some activity like that going on, and they never call me back, can't get any answer. How can I get some answer from the city?
What are you trying to find out? Whether or not...
Are they legal in Denver? What do you know about these things? Are they legal? Well, I know it's not legal.
It's going to depend on where you are in Denver and what the necessary housing ordinances, covenants, restrictions, controls might be in the necessary communities. It's also going to...
Just an old neighborhood, South Denver, and then they're just old houses, nothing fancy, nothing, you know, these... And then they converted the basement to one or two room, and then upstairs. And I don't know. I just got some information, talked to some young people. Oh, we just flew in from Ohio and looking for a house or apartment, and then we're staying in this particular place for a week or two or 3 weeks. But it's kind of expensive. So, but the city don't answer a question when I call in. Hey, what's going on with this property? And they won't say nothing.
I tell you what's really effective is if you just call 311. It's the
I did.
And they didn't get back to you?
Nope.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. But you should really good about that.
Yeah, they should be getting back to you. Well, let me ask you this. When you say these people are in there, evidently you've obviously talked to them to see why they're there or what's going on.
No, okay. I can't. I just saw car license plates from out of state for a week there, and then I'm gone.
All right. What happens is, and here's the problems they face with the shared housing, okay? Obviously, there are different covenants and restrictions in different parts of Denver, and there are laws that can be effective as far as in what areas with zoning. You're allowed to have shared housing, you're allowed to have apartments, you're allowed to lease out, and there can also be occupancy requirements as far as restrictions on the amount of occupancy that can be in a different location.
If that could be that in a residential area that you can have a multi occupying, or next door is a single family, and that would be three unrelated people.
It can happen. You can have that in different areas, but in some areas of Denver it's outlawed, and in other areas you're going to have covenants that aren't going to allow it. Because you got to remember, in addition to your zoning laws, in addition to all the regulations you have, you can have homeowners associations, and you can have covenants that don't allow this. But
they don't have a homeowner association where I concern. My concern in that area is just South Denver and just the older houses, most of them, and then.
And here's the next problem you get, Steve, is the question you have to have is, where do you cross over the line of shared housing? If I have people come in to visit me and they stay for a month at my house, have I gone into the shared housing? Am I starting to do a room for rent? Am I starting to have multiple occupancy, or do I just have people visiting? If somebody...
Well, they're not visitors. No, they're not visitors.
Okay. If you feel they've moved in and you can't get help, then we can help you. We'll find for you, according to your address and your location, exactly what can and can't be done. And we'll get you responses. We'll get you answers from people, okay? Because, you know, and it sounds to me like your situation is where you've got a house, people have been occupying it, and then what's happening is is somebody's moved into, or it looks like you think they're leasing out the rooms.
Yes.
Okay. And if they're leasing out different rooms, that can be a situation where they may be violating the zoning that's
well, I'm 100% sure, but they won't respond. The city won't do. They said, please, you call 311, and then 10 days later, you call back, and said, nothing is substantiated. The situation is closed.
Well, that's interesting now. They told you nothing substantiated?
Right.
Okay, so what do you understand they went out and inspected and they checked it?
Well, no, because the inspector wouldn't call me back. It's just as the 311 operator said, he looked up that certain report, and then that's what they read back to me from a certain file, I guess.
Well, something sounds really interesting here because they got on it and they had information, but it almost sounds like it had already been called in. Do you know?
Probably.
Do you know if other neighbors?
The problem is the parking. You know.
Oh sure.
And then when you have 3-4 people, they have, especially when they individuals, so they have 3-4 cars, and the city give permits to somebody who lived there illegally, but they don't give a permit to me as a owner if I don't live there. And I don't know how can I maintain a property if I don't have a permit, 1-hour parking and things like that.
Okay, well, when you say permits, if you own the property and don't live there, do you lease out your property also?
And a long term, yeah.
Okay, so you have a long term lease, and then what happens is when you show up to do work around the house or to do work on the property, you can't find a parking spot.
Well, I can find it, but 1-hour parking.
Right.
So I gotta keep eye on it and move it, or or sometimes I can put it in the garage or things like that.
But. Have your renters complained about any of the problems with the parking?
Sometimes, yes, because they're visitors, can't even stop for a while if it's the parking folks come by. They mark it and they come back, because if they don't have a sticker on a windshield, then they come back because they know it's a cash cow. There is a $45 ticket.
Well, what it sounds like what you have is this, and it sounds like. If you're talking about the people in the neighborhood who have multiple people or multiple tenants living there, roommates or whatever you want to call them in a shared housing situation, a shared housing occupancy, is what you're facing right now is if they've gotten themselves parking permits, and it sounds like they have, okay?
Yeah.
If they've gotten parking permits, then what's happening is with the parking permits that they've gotten, they've already registered or identified with the city the fact that they have a multiple tenancy and multiple occupancy in that particular building. And it sounds like the city's already approved it. That's what I'm wondering. Because if they've given them these exemptions on the parking permits, they're doing that because these people are saying they live there and they need more than 1 hour of being able to park.
That's
what you're facing. And that could be the problem. And I think the only way we're going to be able to do this is to try and look into it for you. Do you remember talking to Karen Aviles of the Assistant City Attorney, City and County of Denver?
No.
Do you know who you talked to? Was it a clerk or
just a 311 operator read back what the inspector put down. It said that the situation is closed.
Okay. No. We can't do that. We can't let you have that. We're going to take your number and get your address and get your phone number and get the information on this location, and we're going to call and find out what's happening. Okay. Just because an inspector says it's closed, I want to find more about it. I want to find who the inspector is, under what basis they've allowed the shared housing in their location. And, part of allowing shared housing, part of allowing a multiple occupancies in a neighborhood has to be a consideration of the parking. So let's get the information for you and make a call and make some calls and find out for you, all right?
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. We're going to stay on hold. We'll get your name and number. We just talked to Steve. We're going to take a break. You can call us at 303-713-8255. That's 303-713-8255. If you're in Steamboat, call us at 970-457-1009. Lines are open. Give us a call. Welcome back to the Bell and Paul Kliegel Show, 303-713-8255. If you're in Steamboat, 970-457-1009. We'll get to your calls. Give us a call. We've got some lines open. We're going to talk to Eric for a minute, and then we'll go to Susan. Eric, how are things at Caitlin's?
They're doing great. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great. What do you got for us, buddy?
Well, we got a couple specials run by you for the week. We're going to do a breakfast soft taco. We're going to love that with pork chorizo, scrambled eggs, shredded cheese. We're going to load that into a 6-inch flour tortilla. We're going to serve that with the side of our hash browns. You can get your choice of our scratch-made red or green chili. We make it right here in-house. That's going to be breakfast all week. And then our lunch special is going to be a charbroiled steak burrito. We're going to load that up with sautéed bell peppers and onions. We're going to serve that with a side of beans and rice. And again, you can get your choice of our red or green chili. We're going to run that for lunch all week long. And then don't forget, on Mondays and Fridays from 11 to 2, it's all-you-can-eat taco and burrito buffet. It's only $7.99. You can get your choice of carne adobada, chicken, ground beef, all the fixings on the side. It's only $7.99. That actually includes a non-alcoholic beverage in the price. And we're still going strong with the bottomless mimosas. They're only $10. I know it's cooling down, but we're still running those all week. You can get those anytime, so just come on down and check us out. And don't forget, next week, we're going to get into the holiday spirit a little bit. We're going to start running those pumpkin spice pancakes, so be ready for that coming down the road. I'll remind you next week. We're going to start getting into the holiday spirit, run some specials. Come down and check us out.
Eric, where are you located?
We're at 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. That's one block east of Colorado Boulevard, and that's in the Glendale Shopping Center.
Now, Eric, you have on your menu that French toast cinnamon roll.
We do. We have, cinnamon roll French toast. We bake them right here in-house, grill them up, serve them with our own homemade icing. Can't beat it. They're awesome.
I was thinking about one driving in to the studio today, Eric. I'll see you later.
You got it. Have a good day.
Take care, buddy. Thank you. You're listening to the Bell and Paul Kliegel Show, 303-713-8255, Steamboat Springs, 970-457-1009. We're going to talk to Susan right now. Susan, you have a problem with an instructor at college?
Yes.
What's going on?
Actually, it's a quarter-type class, and it's culinary. The instructor was a little, more direct and very forceful in speech towards the students. So throughout the class, for the whole quarter, she would be, I would say, some people would say it was rude, but the fact is that she speaks with people, it seems like you're not giving the student the opportunity to express themselves, and she doesn't seem like she wants to talk to you like you are a person with some sort of knowledge or experience about what you are studying. Well, I'm in my mid-60s. I took this class to refresh in the particular field. And she has made specific comments to me that really weren't warranted. So I sort of let that slide. But over time, it would become increasingly a topic of hers, I would say. So about 2 weeks or 2.5 weeks ago, I asked her a question about one of the things we were doing that evening, and she made a comment, well, you don't listen. And she called my name and she says, you don't listen very loudly in front of everyone. And I just didn't say anything because I was kind of surprised that she did that. So I wanted to go into the freezer to get something, and she was headed, I think, in that direction. So I met her right at the front of the door, and she says, oh, go ahead. So I went in, and then she came in behind me, and she put her hand on the doorknob and held the door and said, you are going to talk to me in a very demanding way. And I looked at her and I said, you know, what is this for this person? Is she going to try to hold me in this freezer or what? So I said, oh, no, that's not going to happen. And I just sort of pushed past her and pushed the door and went back outside. And she started taunting me. I walked to the other side of the room, she followed me around screaming things at me and saying other students said blah, blah, blah. I didn't really hear some of the things she said that students said, but I said to her loudly at that time because I just couldn't take that type of speech from her anymore. I said, please leave me alone.
Okay,
and
so
she kept on.
So what? Where's this end? What happened? What's your question for us, Susan?
My question is, do you handle cases like this from an educational point of view?
Well, we can. Let me ask you. Let's get to some questions, because what I'm worried about is if you have this kind of a relationship with the instructor, can I tell you what your it probably doesn't matter to you what your grade's going to be, but can I give you an idea?
Well, she has been trying to keep me under a C for the entire semester, and we just had a final this past week. I was out. I couldn't go to class for about 3 days because I had a situation that was aggravated from the stress of this, dealing with this person for this whole time, for a whole 10 weeks. So I have been to the doctor, and I have been in bed ever since that night for most of the time that I stayed home trying to recover, with a lot of pain in my muscles, upper neck, shoulders, and things like that.
Okay, so some of this confrontation has led to some physical...
Right. No, it wasn't physical. It was all stress.
No, but I mean, it's led to you having physical problems,
right,
and physical,
right,
manifestations.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me ask you this. Have you talked to the administration?
Yes,
at all
I did. I spoke with the director about 5 weeks ago and says, oh, well, you have 4 weeks left. We have 4 weeks left. Why don't you just go on through? But she's had complaints from other students, which I didn't know about.
She's had complaints from other students?
Other students.
Okay.
About her behavior or her speech or her manners towards other students. And I know of one situation that she was loud in the class. So she tried to be loud with me before, and I told her, I said, I don't argue. And she still had something to say after I said that, and I had to tell her twice. And she still had something to say after that. And then she just left me after I said, I don't argue. You know, so now it came to this point, I guess she wanted to, you know, slice me up, I guess.
Is the school you're going to a private institution?
Yes, it is.
All right, so... I think, first of all, you need to get the necessary paperwork and the necessary documents to make a formal complaint.
Well, I do have a scenario written out. I just wasn't able to do that. What happened the weekend after this happened, I called the dean to let him know to make an appointment. And he said he would get back with me the next day. He will check with the director and ask me, had I spoken to the director? I said, yes, I spoke with her 2 weeks before. And I was supposed to give the director a scenario up to that point, that as of the day that I spoke with her, and I promised I would give it to her that Monday. But this situation happened like the Thursday before that Monday that I promised the printout.
Have you received, do you have any kind of student handbook or students' rights and freedoms and responsibilities book?
Just about everything is online, and I haven't really read it. I've been trying to find rules. This is even before that. Been trying to find the policies online. I have not been able to do that. But when I spoke with the dean, he said, I will check with the director and give you a call back sometime tomorrow, which has been 2 weeks ago, and I'm yet to hear back from him. So what I'm planning on doing so far is this Monday to present my scenario, because I have to add additional information on that.
Is the school federally funded?
Yes.
Does it get loans and it gets federal? Okay. Here's the thing. You said everything's online. There should be something online. There should be some paperwork somewhere.
I know.
That talks about the students' rights.
The policies.
Freedoms, responsibilities, policies. And it should spell out how you can go through a formal grievance process against an instructor.
Right.
When an instructor crosses over the line, students have the right to talk about it and to address it.
Yes.
And to make sure their rights are honored, especially when you've paid your tuition and when you've become a part of the academic program. Now, when you signed and when you enrolled in the school, did you get any kind of documents there that also spoke about?
No, everything is online. As far as I know, nothing was handwritten. Of course, they have the usual little folders and flyers about the school and what it offers and so forth within the specific academic area of study. But other than that, I haven't seen anything in written writing, and I've even gone to like the record section and asked questions. Do you have a program where I can see what you are offering and how everything sets out as far as your fees? They have nothing to offer me in writing.
Let's go the other way. Have you made any of your complaints in writing?
No, this is what I was going to hand out to the director that the Monday after the incident happened, I promised to bring it to her that Monday, which was the incident happened on the 10th. So the Monday following the 10th, I was going to give it to her, and I promised that. Then on the 10th, on that weekend after the incident, I left a message on the dean's voicemail that I wanted an appointment. He called me that Monday and said he would get back with me the following day. So since then, I haven't been able to present anything. I haven't gone back to the school except for this past Thursday, which was our final night. And, I mean, even when I start getting ready to go to class, my buddy would start reacting. It's like, well, I don't want you to go there type of a way, you know.
Well,
very strange.
When a teacher steps over the line, you know, it's going to depend a lot on the institution and what's going on. But there's both, you know, civil and potential criminal penalties that can be addressed. I think what's going to have to happen, we've got to talk to you, find out the school, and help you with it. But we need to put things in writing for you. And that's what has to happen. We've got to get some stuff in writing, because right now everything you're saying can be contested. The administration can say they didn't understand it, they didn't know about it.
Mm-hmm.
They can have their notes different way.
There were witnesses, because I said this particular incident occurred in front of students, and I even said to her at that time, I said, these people, you are talking loudly to me in front of the class. You have no respect, you know, and they may think I'm a freak because she's telling me other people complain about me. Well, how come I haven't heard about it for 8 weeks? You wait until we're down to the wire, because when I present my assignment homework, she doesn't want to give me a grade. But I had to ask her 3 times, where's my grade for 3 things that are missing? And now this past, our final, which was last Thursday, I asked her again. And when I did look on Friday, she did post at least 3 of them.
Well, we're gonna get to the bottom of this with you, okay?
Sure.
We're gonna take your name and number. I think there you do have rights, and we need to be able to protect your rights as a student against an abusive teacher. And if that's what we have, then we're going to help you out with it, and we're going to at least make sure the administration knows this complaint is in writing. Plus, we're going to find out the history. We've got to know the history. If we have an instructor who's been doing this, students have a right to know what they're getting into. So
yeah.
let us take your I'm going to put you on hold. We can get your name and number and have someone call you.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Bell and Polk Legal Show. We have lines open, 303-713-8255. That's 303-713-8255. Even Steamboat, it's 970-457-1009. We'll be right back. Bell and Polk Legal Show, 303-713-8255. Give us a call. I'm Brad Pollock, Rob Brovich in studio. A little something I want to talk about. When we talk to people, quite often we're talking about documenting what's going on. It's important that you document. It's important that you keep track of what's happening. It's important that you know and you're able to identify. I can't tell you how many times we are telling people you must keep notes, you must keep records. Let's talk about some of our calls. We've had a call concerning room sharing or house sharing. And when we start to document what's happened, it's important that we have the paperwork that's going to allow us to be able to determine and identify who's there, what's been happening, how many times we see people there, what the parking is, how the parking situation has been how many people are going in and out of the house, or how often they're going in and out, what it looks like. So we have some documentation. And who did you talk to as far as on the 311 call, and what did they tell you? You've got it documented. We just got through talking to Susan, who's having a problem with her professor. When we start talking about that, we've got to be able to have documentation of what happened. It's got to be something in writing. And when she says she's given it to the administration and she's talked to the administration, that's something else we have to be able to document and be able to talk to. Who did you talk to? When did you talk to them? What was said? And when did they say they'd get back to you? Without documentation, you're not going to be able to usually pursue a case very well. And actually, and in one of the calls we had today was dealing with a poor contractor. Once again, dealing with that contractor, you have to have all the documents. You want to get the documents because so often the documents spell out the difference of what's happening when we want to talk about what happened, how the house was built, and the contract involved.
Same situation if you're in an automobile accident or any type of personal injury. You need to document exactly what took place and get very specific details. It's so easy to forget 2-3 years down the road when your case could go into litigation. What insurance adjuster did you speak with? What's their name? What's your claim number? And you need to document it and keep a record. Open a file for yourself. I will tell you, more times than not, our clients just have a hard time recalling what took place 2-3 years ago, as like anyone else would. And you hear more times than not, if I would have known this was going to go into litigation, I would have documented it. When you're in a car crash, just initially, just presume that it's going into litigation and just keep really good documentation. It really helps everyone out quite a bit.
Now, where that especially comes into play is where a lot of times we're talking to people and we're trying to discuss how this has adversely affected their life. You hear all the time people want to know, what's my case worth and what's the value of a case? Well, to learn the value of somebody's case, one of the first things you've got to do is you've got to address and you've got to look at how this has adversely affected their life, because you're trying to paint this picture of the difference before accident versus after accident. And when you're trying to paint this picture, what you're trying to do is say, okay, how has your life changed? When you get involved in it and you just say, well, my life changed. My life's different. That doesn't make it. What makes it is when you can say, I used to be involved in these activities and I can't do them. Or, you know, I used to go to my kids' different programs and I don't go to them. And then they're going to say, well, what programs have you missed? That's the next question that comes out. What programs have you missed? And any of you sitting there listening to this show are thinking, yeah, that would make sense. You want to know what programs have been missed. Well, how many of you can remember the programs your child attended, or that you would have attended with your child last year or the year before, and what programs you might have missed? How many of you remember when you might or might not have been scheduled to go out to dinner or go to a movie or go to a function or do things with your children or with your spouse or with friends that you might have missed? These things all of a sudden get lost, and they get lost in your memories, especially if you're hurt, especially if you're trying to struggle to take care of things.
And that's how we prove our non-economic damages in a civil litigation case, is by showing the jury how this has affected you as a human and what you've missed out on. When are you in pain? When aren't you in pain? Can you no longer sit in a movie for an hour and a half? So you can no longer go to movies. You can no longer go to concerts. You can't participate in the bowling league. That all of that evidence helps us establish your non-economic losses.
So when somebody's saying, hey, what's my case worth? What kind of value do I have to my injuries? And how do I get compensation for my losses? First thing is, we have to determine your losses. And to determine your losses means we have to learn about you. Now, at Bell and Pollock, we have certain forms we have you fill out. What it hurts to do. Things you did before and you didn't do after. Things that it hurts you to do so you don't enjoy them as much. That you curtail your activities and what's happening. And we have forms to discuss that with you and to be what I call reminders of areas of your life that could be affected. We talk about home services. We talk about, how does this adversely affect your ability to do things around the house? Because we want to know about how it adversely affects it. And then we need to know how strong of a case we have to be able to prove and document. You've got to remember, when you're going to the insurance company on their side, or when you're going to your own insurance company on a UIM claim, you're having to, or you're asking them to pay you money. And when you're asking or telling somebody they've got to pay you money, the first thing you have to do is be ready to document the effect. Now, a lot of times we say, well, that's lost income and that's medical bills. And there's a whole array There's a whole discussion that can be held about the medical bills. Whole discussion to be held about lost wages in the future, medical bills in the future, and all the different things that are going on. But it's when we're talking about what we call the non-economic damages, those damages that aren't directly related to a dollar, now we start having to put value on things. And the value comes when we start looking at what's important in your life. And we've got to be able to know what's important in your life. We've got to know what was happening. So when somebody wants to know, hey, what's my case worth? Or how do I value a case? What do I do with the case? We want to look at all the different aspects of your case. It's important to do it. Now, Rob, the minute I say that, and we talked about work comp earlier, some of this doesn't apply in work comp.
That's true. It's still very, very important that you document how you were injured and what took place. But going back to Brad's point, in the work comp system, you do not get compensated for non-economic losses, pain and suffering, things of that nature. The work comp system does not compensate you for that. You get paid based upon your impairment rating for the most part, and they do not consider non-economic damages in the work comp system. But in a civil lawsuit, such as a slip and fall, such as a car crash, you're going to get compensated for those non-economic losses.
So, you've been listening to the Bell and Polk Legal Show. We're glad we had this last few minutes to be able to talk to you a little bit about what happens in personal injury cases. You've been hurt in an accident. You've been hurt for any reason. And you believe it's been the result of someone's negligence. Give us a call, 303-795-5900, bellpolk.com or championsofthepeople.com. We're going to be right back here next Saturday to take your calls. If you have any questions for those who did call, we'll be getting back in touch with you. And in the meantime, all of you have a good, safe week, and we'll talk to you next week.